Started Monday with a full day at the White House. Now I'm here at KCPW to tell you what happened. This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Override, override. That's the call I'm hearing. Dan McKay on the right.
Is the gender wage gap hurting Utah women? I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. But first, this news. Good morning. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the Political Center, and on the conservative right, Representative Dan McKay.
Good morning, Natalie.
And on the liberal left, Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Hello, Natalie.
You notice, Dan, I didn't say the progressive left because it always bothers me that Jim thinks he's the only progressive in the room, because I think you're progressive if you support what's right and true.
And I appreciate you not calling it the reverse, totally bass-ackwards, right, and I appreciate that also.
Excellent. Hey, let's start out the program today just by talking about local elections a little bit. I was sort of lamenting with Jim before you got here, Dan, that I'm kind of disappointed that there's not more big picture ideas being talked about locally in the election. So like if you took Mike Weinholz or Governor Herbert or Sean Reyes, or is it Jim Harper? Is that who's taking him on in the AG's office, Jim?
John Harper.
John Harper. Anyway, I don't know any like big visionary ideas that are being talked about for this state right now. It just seems like housekeeping.
Yeah, it's a battle of personality more than it's a battle of policy.
Yeah, yeah. Jim, do you agree with that?
I think our elections ought to be broad visions about where we want to take the state. I think we ought to be saying, I would do serious things about air pollution. I would spend a hell of a lot more money and raise your taxes for education. I would be down there protecting public land and dropping all those lawsuits. Those are the kind of issues that people ought to come to the table.
Yeah.
And not all these little billboards that say, I'm for education. Well, yeah.
Yeah, well, so if you go to the national political world, there are big ideas. I mean, Bernie's going to, you know, break up all the big banks, he thinks. At least he's talking about something big. And Donald Trump, as much as I
misguided.
Despise him. Misguided. Donald Trump's putting his finger up at everything.
Which finger?
The middle one. But I just found myself as I was thinking, okay, you know, both sides of the aisle, we talk about interesting political things, and I don't think the local elections are interesting enough yet.
Well, and Governor Herbert, I'm just going to add this. It's always funny, right? But he has a billboard, here in Salt Lake that says balancing the budget, you know, and it's like, well, first of all, the governor has very little to do with balancing the budget, right? I mean, at the end of the day, there are some helpful suggestions that the governor's office does from their administrative side of things, but generally it's a legislative appropriations process, right? Number one.
Mm-hmm.
But number two, there's a constitutional mandate to balance the budget.
You don't have a
choice. So you could argue that every governor since statehood has balanced the budget, right?
Sure.
So it's not
I mean, as I understand it, they're constitutionally required to submit a balanced budget to you. And so, yeah, they all do it.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's do this. Jim, you were in Washington, D.C. Last week. And so you got to go to our nation's capital. How were things there?
This week.
Oh, was it this week?
Yeah,
okay.
You just got back.
Okay,
yeah,
how were things there?
Just got back, yeah.
I want a napkin.
Cherry blossoms blooming?
Yeah. I didn't notice one cherry blossom. I got there at 11:30 at night, and I was there all day long, and then I got out on that 7:30 flight the next morning. I mean, and that was too much time in Washington. I don't know how these guys – I really don't like it.
Interesting.
You know,
I don't like it.
But I got an opportunity to meet with the Department of Justice at some length, the head guy for lawsuits in competition in – Section 3, which is the newspapers. We had a very long chat with his staff. It's the same guy that has been really aggressive in Orange County and going after the Orange County Register. And I think we're getting ready here to have very, very serious discussions and hopefully end up with a independent, generationally, financially set Salt Lake Tribune that is going to be the editorial voice of the progressives and the liberals and the Democrats for a long time to come. I'm terrifically optimistic
on
that.
So Dan's going to have a paper in the Deseret News. Jim's going to have a paper in the Tribune, and I'm going to have no paper.
You can have the paper in the middle.
There is none.
And then I went
it
off
doesn't
to the,
sell, Natalie, unfortunately.
Then went off to the White House where I met with the senior advisors to the president on bear's ears. And I'm astonished at the demagoguery that our governor, our congressional delegation has been involved in, complete Soviet-style disinformation about bear's ears. And it is my mission now to make sure that the people in the White House, and it is the president who's making this decision, this president that has been treated so respectfully by Mike Lee and Orrin Hatch and the rest, to make sure that that administration understands the facts and not the blowhards of Rob Bishop and his cronies who were just plain lying to the administration. So that was item number two on the agenda. And then a big party at the White House.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Dan, I need to give you some time to just go.
I'm exhausted.
Yeah, just take him on, will you?
But, you know, it's look, we all know who Jim is and what he's doing, and we get it. He's not supported by 80% of Utah. And at the end of the day, he's off being a mouthpiece, and he's calling us the disinformation group, right? I'm fine with that, I guess, because, you know, he's got his job to do. I love Jim. I'm just going to say, Jim, 80, you know, I'm not sure what the numbers are. But at the end of the day, we have plenty of national parks here in this state and national monuments. And so the fact that the Democrats, out of political revenge, every time there's a Democratic president, look for an opportunity to name another national park in Utah is, I think, bad policy.
I'll just say from the political center, I'll take another national park, another national monument. There's many areas worthy of more preservation in this state. I just want it to happen through a public process and not by fiat.
Amen.
I get Jim upset whenever I say that.
But there is no fiat.
Well, a signature with the Antiquities Act.
Bishop went through 2 years of process and came out with a political rant that Donald Trump would have been embarrassed about. That whole process
is
just humiliating and embarrassing and had so many poison pills in there that Snow White would have been.
But you're faulting the process that we have founded our country on. And you're faulting that process and saying it'd be much better by legislative fiat if the president can just sign a pen and just move around millions of acres, right?
That's the process.
I'm with Natalie. I actually agree. I would take another national park, but I would love it to be a public process, public consideration, elected officials making that decision instead of a political revenge move. And that's what it is every time the Democrats get in.
Yeah. Hey, let's jump, just since we're in Washington.
It's why you're going to always struggle to get a Democratic nominee through on a statewide election. It's because every time you guys get into office nationally, Utah gets the short end of the stick every time.
Dan, let's jump to the Badger State, Wisconsin, and what happened there. A contested Republican convention is looking
more likely than not.
Tell us your latest update.
Well, you saw, I can't remember who said it. The other day in the news, the comment was, look, if Donald Trump is one delegate short, he's done. If he does not have the requisite 1239 required, he's done. And so what that tells me is, I don't think, and last night I was watching some lineup of, you know, this is how
all
it could happen, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, they were lining up things kind of similar to what Governor Leavitt was kind of laying out. This time they had the advantage of another primary having taken place, and they were just saying, look, it is more likely than not. In fact, Vegas has now taken the odds down to 49 or 48% that Donald even gets there.
Interesting. And Jim, Bernie, what has he won, like 6 of the last 7 states or something?
He's on a roll.
Lose. The new Republican motto, slogan, come on, and I believe it goes right back to Mitt Romney, has to do with getting rid of Donald, getting rid of the Donald. And it is lose with Cruz. Somebody has to explain this to me. If Donald Trump marches as Mussolini into that hall with the majority of the delegates for him, of the people that have voted, and the hall goes, no, you've got millions more people who voted for you and a majority of the delegates, but you're not getting the nomination. Explain to me how that's good for Republicans.
Crazy
stuff. Your party's going to implode.
Crazy stuff. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. In the next segment, we're going to talk about the Panama Papers.
Jim DeBacchus proudly on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the political middle. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I have, you know, a senator and a representative in the studio, and I just want to ask both of you about Governor Herbert and this vetoing of this children's education funding. It's almost $2 million in education funding that he took the line item veto to. Guys, will there be a veto override session?
You.
Well, I don't know if there's going to be one or not.
The majority party's got to answer that
one,
Dan.
Okay, fine. I think if I was to put my finger in the air, I think it is tough to put together enough votes for a veto override ever. Mm-hmm. I will say this, though. There is one duty that the legislature – look, policy positions, we can argue about policy positions with the governor all day long. Do you know what I mean? You can have differences of opinions. But the process is you got to get 38 votes in the House, 15 votes in the Senate, and one signature from the governor. You don't get that, it's really tough to get that veto override for a policy position, right?
Yeah.
But for a budgeting appropriation stuff, that is one thing that we tend to say, that's our job, Governor, not yours. And we take it very seriously. The Constitution's very clear. I don't love the line item veto ability, you know, for the governor just to strike out one line of something he doesn't like. Everything's been through the process, and I've heard this a bunch of times. You may not like one particular thing in the budget. So, you know, someone may point to one thing and say, well, I don't like that. Well, I don't like – I love this, but I don't like that. That's not the spirit of compromise as you're trying to put together a budget. Okay?
Interesting.
I think, if I want a prediction, I think there will be an override.
Interesting. Okay. I want to hear you, Senator DeBacchus, but as I turn it over to you, I just want to say that I completely disagree with Dan on the line item veto. That might be because I come from the executive branch, but I love it as a fiscal protection for this state. And if there's a line item that is a bridge to nowhere or a vendor bill, I'm okay with it.
So I don't know what's going to happen. It's up to the majority party to decide. The governor gets kudos. Not cooties, kudos.
Now, Dan, did you just hear that? That's not common on
this
program.
He did a terrific.
It sounded like an endorsement.
I mean, from him.
He did a terrific election year, kind of the right thing. The bill, and I'm getting tons of my constituents saying, give money to Upstart. Upstart is not a bad program. It's an expensive program. It is a vendor bill. It is a sole source software.
Helps pre-kindergarten kids with their learning.
Exactly. And,
yeah.
and it goes
especially
through,
focused on Title I. Don't miss that nuance.
No, we can talk about that. But it's not it assumes the kid has a laptop computer and takes it from there. So we were already giving but it's to help kindergarten and pre-kindergarten kids get ready for school.
Yeah.
We're in desperate need of money for that. So this program, this particular vendor program, has almost $5 million ongoing. It has, depending on who you listen to, somewhere around $2 million unspent in the bank. And what the governor is looking at vetoing is an additional $1.5 million for this one program, which would be fine, except 60% of this money is going to upper-income families, to rich Utah families. I'm not against it, but you've got to weigh that against Representative from St. George, to Lowry Snow's bill, HB 42, which took money, $12 million, and directed it exactly and 100% at-risk generational poverty income, and would have taken those 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 year olds and gotten them ready so that by fourth grade they would have been equal with their non-at-risk. So what the legislature did is it took those moms and Draper, and it made sure they were there with their vendor bill to help their kids, and it grabbed all of the money out of these desperately poor, generationally challenged kids that they gave no money to whatsoever. That's why I think the governor did the right thing in vetoing that. And one other thing, the
gave no new money to. Let's be clarified, because we spend millions on programs directly benefiting and headed towards those groups. So saying that they got no money is disingenuous, because we spend a lot of money for those groups.
Not a lot. We're funding.
Not
that.
Enough. If you want to say not enough, I'll.
This
not.
Would have Senator Milner's bill would have put $12.5 million toward this program, which was a significant increase. They funded that at zero. Executive appropriations took that all out, and added another $1.5 million to this Vanderbilt upstart. So there it is. One other quick thing. The Teen Chef Masters funding, which funded for $275,000 a TV show for 14 Utah kids, and it provided a four-year scholarship for this winner to get an education outside of the state of Utah. I'm not sure that's the best role of government. The governor vetoed it.
Yeah. Interesting.
But it's on the same line as the upstart. Can I just say one thing about Vanderbilt?
You sure can. I just want, though, our listening audience to know that when Jim, you know, talks about things like that, it's like he's conducting a symphony.
Yeah.
I mean, well, he's got his arms up, and it's a pleasure to watch.
It's like he's conducting a symphony where everybody has paper instruments, and Jim is making stuff up. I love the man. But I'm just going to say this. The Vanderbilt thing is so funny. I love this context. The Vanderbilt, the idea that something is a Vanderbilt because one group provides it or something
else. And they sole source that money to them.
Sole source it to them. That just doesn't exist, right? You write it so that you accomplish specific legislative objectives, and that company fulfills that objective. You know, maybe they're a Utah company. Specifically, this one is, right? Waterford is the one that he's complaining about. But it's a local Utah company, number one. Local Utah jobs, all those other things, number one. But two, every bill we pass up there is potentially – or sorry, every spending mechanism we have is potentially a vendor bill. Let's talk about state buildings for just example. We have really only two contractors in this state who are qualified to build those buildings based on state recommendations. So every state building we build, vendor bill. State highways, there are really a small group of contractors that we are willing to use for those. Every time we build a road, every time, vendor bill. Go down the list of all the things that we provide and they're, quote, vendor bills. I get it. It sounds like this attractive, you know, negative thing to say about some spending measure that you don't recommend or you don't agree with. But it's completely a false, pretense or false description of what actually happens in that appropriations process.
And for our listeners, you can just see how contentious and serious the discussions get on Capitol Hill.
I'm back.
Let's talk about the big news on the Panama Papers for a minute. This is big deal because it's a big consortium of journalists that have found all these offshore tax havens through over 11 million leaked documents. I think in the Snowden leaks, there's, you know, like a million or something. I mean, this is orders of magnitude more information, and you've already had the the Prime Minister of Iceland, resign over this. What are your predictions? Is this going to be a big deal?
Well, they haven't got to the American. I mean, the amount of information here is astonishing. It must be every single memo of this giant law firm in Panama, which has laundered billions and billions and billions of dollars to a lot of uncomfortable people around the world, really rich people, I suspect, now. So their criteria of who they looked through to release it first had to do with war criminals and a lot. They have not got to Americans yet. So this has the possibility to change the political landscape because I think it is going to bring into the forefront what a lot of people have already thought, a lot of Trump people as well as Sanders people, and that is that the rich people are not paying their fair share, that they have these mechanisms. And while it gets taken out of my paycheck, it doesn't for the billionaires and the trillionaires and the multimillionaire class. I think this has a potential to change the landscape, perhaps in time for the election.
Dan, do you agree?
I don't know. It's really going to see what it's going to matter on who gets caught up in it. The Prime Minister of Iceland, who cares? Right?
Yeah.
If it is a well-known Republican or
John
well-known
Kerry.
Democrat, whatever it may be, right? I don't want to, you know, name any names because I really don't know. But it's going to depend on who that is. Whoever gets caught up in it, from an American perspective, it is going to highlight that. But it's going to highlight something else that Jim's not talking about, which is a policy problem we have to deal with all the time at the state level, which is when you come down and you make up a bunch of whole new taxes and you're going to ratchet up taxes on income, yada, 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 people follow the path of least resistance all the time to find these shelters, to find these types of things. And yes, it does leave the poor and the middle class in a position where when you ratchet up these taxes, they are less prepared to deal with these things and to find these islands where they can store this money, right? Mm-hmm. And they're less in that position because they're hand to mouth, right? For the most part.
Right.
So when you look at it from a policy perspective, you balance this all the time. The higher you raise the tax to pay for something, the more you disincentivize people or incentivize people to leave.
Yeah, very true.
And we have a talented workforce here in Utah. I'd hate to do that. But you look at what it will – this is the problem with government regulation. Anytime you regulate something – you always are going to create an incentive for someone to find an alternative to your regulation, and they're finding in these foreign countries who need the money and want the jobs, which is something it apparently the Bernie supporters are not interested in.
It's going to be interesting to watch. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, and we should remind our listeners that it is Pledge Week. KCPW.org, make your pledge. You guys want to make any pitch to our listeners on KCPW and Both Sides of the Aisle?
I will match the next $5 that comes. No, I'm just kidding. No, it would be great. KCPW provides a valuable community service, and they let Jim and I hang out with Natalie. So in and of itself.
Nobody else should do that.
That's pretty decent. I think we could appreciate the support.
I love it.
It unsoils our reputations, doesn't it?
I'm
not sure what Natalie does
legitimize. It really does legitimize
the
two of us.
Way too nice to me. But let's go to a gender issue. Let's go to this gender wage gap issue. Census Bureau data showing that Utah has the second widest gender wage gap, Louisiana the worst. I don't know if you guys have followed that very closely. I have thoughts about it. You guys can question me if you want, but what do you
look?
What?
Provo, Orem, ranked number one as the most discriminatory area in the United States of America. And all of those usual excuses about, well, women take time off for pregnancy and women do this and women don't really want it, they were all filtered out for this so that it said comparable jobs, comparable experience, comparable time. Provo Orem is the worst area in the United States of America for discrepancy between men and women. And we ought to recognize that. Like an alcoholic, the first step toward recovery is admitting there's a problem. And frankly, most of the establishment in Utah just refuses to say that's even a problem. It's a problem.
Dan, your thoughts on that? And you read the news story, saw that?
You know, economically is where my mind goes, right? I think to economics and supply and demand and availability of the labor force and some of those things. I really don't know how to fix it from a government perspective. You know, I just don't know that there's a, you know, you must pay every gender the same. I don't know if that necessarily works. Mm-hmm. It is a sad commentary, I think, on the way employers are valuing their female employees' efforts. And if I was an employer, I would be if I was an employer setting wage and salary for some of my female or male employees, I would be trying to find a way to value their actual effort and their contribution to the company. And I think it's just my one person's analysis. I think if you did that and everybody's looking at it just from a contribution from the company, I would be surprised that it wasn't reversed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would just say,
I don't mean that terrible.
We need to go to gripes, but I do think, and Jim, you referenced it, but I would challenge our listeners to make sure when you read about those stories, ask the hard questions. Has it been adjusted for occupation? Has it been adjusted for part-time, full-time mix? Has it been adjusted for the age of the labor force? All these things that can affect wages. I'm certain that there's discrimination that exists, but it's not as bad as people would think.
That's good to hear.
Okay, we need to go to gripes. Jim?
I'll be really quick.
Let's do it.
Democrats, exhale. It is perfectly normal. As a matter of fact, it would be awful if we weren't yelling and screaming and debating and clobbering each other in Hillary and in Bernie. This is for the presidency of the United States. It all doesn't have to be general conference kind of congeniality with everybody putting their hands up. It's good. Democrats fight, bite, scream, kick, put those candidates through it. The process will will create the best candidate and stop all this namby-pamby. Oh, everybody needs to stop saying bad things. Baloney! Go for it. Go after each other.
Jim, when he said Excel, I thought we were going to talk about pot, but he's just talking about,
I know,
you know, the marketplace of ideas. Make it happen.
Yeah, I can't follow that. My gripe today is I always have to go after DeBacchus. Can I go first next time?
Okay.
Because I always, his gripes
I'm always
are
worried that you're not ready for it. You know?
His gripes
you
are
you
so
say you
good.
Don't like to gripe.
I don't have a, I'm not a griper. You're right.
I'm not a griper.
But I just say my gripe is I am not as good a griper as Jim is.
That's fair. Maybe you can jump on mine. I'm not going to gripe. I wanted to just make a comment about how pleased I was about the LDS Church's release of the I Was a Stranger effort.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, really neat. Wall Street Journal does a nice article on it. For those of you who are not members of the LDS faith, haven't followed this, I would encourage you to go listen to Elder Karen's talk from the LDS General Conference, where he laid out the humanitarian case for this effort. And I got to say that refugee resettlement in our state, Catholic community services, other faith traditions, very involved with it, super important.
So there's one quote. I just want to read it from you
because
I loved it. It was, "This moment does not define them," speaking of refugees, "but what we do to help them will define us."
Gotta love it. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I've been joined by Jim DeBacchus and Dan McKay. The program is produced by Ross Chambliss. Thanks for listening.